Help keep our community safe and healthy during National Prescription Drug Takeback Day, October 25th. Find a collection site near you at DEATakeback.com. Do your part to lower overdose deaths and prevent drug misuse before it starts.
Welcome to another episode of the Bamateur Hour. I am Bama John. Clay Hall joins us to preview the Ohio State Texas and talk all things Ohio State football. We are privileged to have Clay here joining us on this episode. Today is Thursday, August 28th, 2025, in the year of our Lord. Thank you for tuning in. We now have over 3,600 subscribers to our YouTube channel. We're still growing. If you are watching us on YouTube and haven't subscribed, please subscribe. If you're a subscriber, please also hit the notify button. If you're listening to us on the streaming platforms, whether it's Spotify, iHeart, RSS, Apple, we thank you for listening and streaming us. Please follow us and subscribe as well on those platforms. Let me give a quick introduction to Clay Hall. Clay, thank you very much for joining us today. Clay is a longtime sports broadcaster, sports commentator, and sports reporter in Columbus, Ohio. He worked with the ABC affiliate and Fox affiliate in Columbus as sports director. He's been a part of the Ohio State radio broadcast team. Clay recently retired as a sports director, but he's really not retired, and he's active in the sports talk space, and he's now part of the podcasting universe as well. Clay is in the know for Ohio State football and all things Ohio State sports. Clay's going to give us a preview of the Ohio State-Texas game, can give us a rundown of Ohio State's team as they lost, I believe it's 14 players to the NFL draft, so they're really having to retool to make another run for the national championship. Clay, thank you very much for joining us. And we'll let you know, you are our first guest who's a non-Bamateur. And you may ask, what the heck is a Bamateur? A Bamateur is just amateurs like myself who really don't have any experience, but we love Alabama sports and we love to talk it, so hence Bamateur. Thank you very much for joining us.
Please
fill in any gaps on your background if I misrepresented anything, just so that the folks can understand your breadth of experience and knowledge.
Well, first, I feel like, John, I'm back at WCBI-TV in Columbus, Mississippi. I'm loading up the gear to make that 60-mile trek to the Capstone in Tuscaloosa to interview Bear Bryant. That's how old I am at 67, almost 68 now. And I was just telling somebody this story the first time that there's just so many stories. So back in the day, the weekly Alabama presser, Coach Bryant would talk to the print and the electronic. And so after he finished with the print guys and gals, he would go to this room and there would be chairs set up in a single file line. And normally somebody like Tuscaloosa or Birmingham would be at the top of the line. And somebody like me, a beginner in Columbus, Mississippi, market 130-something, 140-something, I'm in the back, and it's like 12 people. So you get two questions, maybe three, and then you exit, and everybody moves up a chair. It's like, what's that game where you, anyway?
Musical chairs.
Bingo. So I'm back there, and I'm like, there are no more questions. What am I going to say? And I'm a tad nervous anyway as I approach the legend. And so he says, I finally get up there 35 minutes later. Who are you, son? Well, I'm Clay Hall, sir, with WCBI-TV in Columbus, Mississippi. And he says, oh, they still got the lights on over there? But he immediately put me at ease. And then it's kind of like when I met Urban Meyer many, many years later with much more savvy about me. It was not such a issue, but it's just one of those things you'll always remember. And I think I even later, when I got back to Columbus, I not only did my story, but I wrote a column in the paper about about this trepidation of meeting this legend, and later on covered his funeral. I went to the, what was it, the Liberty Bowl in Memphis against Illinois. Still very vivid memories for me. Coach was must have had 16 snowmobile suits on that night. But as I recall, the tide prevailed, right?
Am they I did. Right? They
yeah.
did.
Anyway, that's my former life. I have two lives, the one I led in the South and being in Columbus since 1995. And I ran into Reese Davis at a game day show, and I had heard that Reese was going to interview for the job I got. He was at the Wendy's down the street, and he was about 15 minutes from going to the interview, and ESPN called him, and he said, somebody said, Reese, don't take the interview. We're going to hire you. And he's, well, what? how legitimate is that? There's no need. There's no need. We're going to have a contract in the mail or whatever email. And so he didn't go. And I did, obviously. And I got the gig, and I was doing a story with him at game day. And he said, I always wondered who got that job. And I said, that would be me. Thank you very much. I think you've done okay. And it's worked out for me 30 years later, before I retired, and at least from the TV station. So this has been an incredible, I've had so many enriching experiences in media. Back in Jackson, Mississippi, we covered HBCUs and, you know, you just the Jackson States and the Alcorns and the Mississippi Valleys. I covered Jerry Rice in those days, and there's just been, and now to cover Ohio State and to go to every shrine, college football shrine in this country has been incredible. And then I got to kind of cap it last year when I did the sideline radio. And after 30 years or so, you cover the team, you're around the team, you're trying to endear yourself to the program so that you can get stories, break stories, whatever. But this nine-game, eight-game deal that I got to do really put me on the inside. You literally travel with the team, sleep where they sleep. You don't eat with them. They don't, yeah, you're on your own there. But it just was an incredible experience. And I'll never forget after they beat Penn State last year, which was a huge, huge win for them. We're boarding the plane. You fly, as I said, and Ryan Day is standing in the aisle, and he's like naming every person. Clay, oh, get in here, baby. You could just see what it meant to him. He was on such a high. And I later found out as you get on the plane, what happens is they give you a Dove bar. I don't think I'm speaking out of school here. And so the media sit in the back, you don't sit with the team. And one of the SIDs is like, Clay, you got the Dove bar, right? I said, yeah, it's frozen. We're home in, 20 minutes or whatever. And like people turn around and they go, eat the Dove bar. That's what... It's like, don't break the streak here. This is what you do. I mean, there's just a million stories like that over the years, and I didn't mean to monopolize the time there.
No, I have to ask you, since you did the sideline, what was the last game you did? Because you didn't do the full season last year. Which was the last one you did?
Yeah, Penn State was the last.
Okay.
And to be standing there in the locker room, and they're throwing guys around, and you're just seeing all of the inside. I've always wanted to write I was always fascinated by coach talks, pregame, whatever's post game. And just those moments when you see the bond and you see the love they have for one another And you see the sense of accomplishment. And I'm able to see that in my own son, who's a lacrosse coach at Lafayette. And they just had the best season in school history, 100 years. They finally got the breakthrough. And what it fueled was the construction of a $17 million new complex, offices, weight room, the whole bit. And the school just put that out. And to see those kids' faces and to see, and I just know how much and how long you have to work to make something like that happen. And it was very similar here when I came. ABC6 WSYX was a third place station. And yet over time, and because we gave so much weight and resources and hustle and all of that, I thought it was a big part of why we went from 3 to 1. So I retired number one. It's a team thing, and I'm the biggest team guy there is. But it takes, sometimes it takes years, and it did take years for us to turn the tide here, and then to see my son win these big games. I'll get all emotional. But I just couldn't have been happier for him, because you know what has been invested, and that's like any football team as well.
So you've been there for the Jim Tressel Championship, the Urban Meyer Championship, and now the Ryan Day Championship. So I thought what was great about this season last year is with the extended playoffs, you could lose two games and still win a natty. That Michigan game, it was so shocking, such a disappointment. How did that team bounce back, get refocused, and then do what they did? I thought they were the best team, and they proved it on the field, but I know that was a tough loss to rebound from. How did they pull themselves out of that tailspin and then go on that great run, which, you know, tell me how that happened.
Well, that story's been told up here a few times. Because it was like death. It was a funeral. It was as low as you can go, because Ryan followed Jim Tressel, who was 9-1. He followed Urban Meyer, who was 7-0. And Michigan, before he came along, thought they'd never win again. They turned the tide with the help of Connor Stallions and many, many others.
The name we won't mention, Mud.
Yes, don't get me started on the penalties there. Let me just say this. The NCAA will not put its cash cows out to pasture. They'll never take a Michigan off TV. It was ridiculous that they suddenly had this epiphany that we're not going to penalize the current players. Well, they've been doing that for 100 years, and they would always pick on somebody like Middle Tennessee State or Mississippi State, or
Alabama fans will say they got hit pretty hard in the late 90s with DuBose. So
that's true.
They got hit pretty hard, and they're pretty bitter about it. But anyway, get back to how Ohio State pulled themselves out of the dumpster and they went on that great run.
So it was It was a meeting. It either took place on Sunday. I can't recall if it was Sunday or because the team's off on Monday, or it was Tuesday. And Ryan Day's in a room with the entire team, no assistants. And apparently he opened the floor and these players let it all hang out. They called out the coach. They called out their teammates. And by the time they left this 3-hour meeting, they were of one accord, because they knew they were a hell of a team, and they missed 2 chip shot field goals. It's unbelievable that Michigan won that game, and you got to give them credit.
By the way, Michigan then beat up on Alabama pretty good and humiliated Alabama. So people here are pretty bitter about Michigan as well, but you know, we don't have a consolation prize of a natty like Ohio State did. So
I watched that game and I was kind of beside myself. I said, this can't be happening. Alabama's going to have a single digit in front of its win column. It's unreal. But anyway, that team that started that night against Tennessee was a different team. And you could just, when they scored on their first three possessions, they were rolling. And then they go to the Rose Bowl and absolutely dismantle Oregon, who had beaten them in the regular season at Autzen Stadium in Eugene. And then you get to the last two, Texas, and a play that will go down. I think there's two plays in that game. The screen pass to Travion Henderson, 75 yards. He's like, he's booking 9.3 in the, you know, 100. And then the strip sack and fumble by Jack Sawyer, who has become a folk hero now.
Well, and really Caleb Downs on the previous play when he blew up that, that wide run on that stretch play. That,
right.
And, of course, Alabama was unhappy to lose Caleb Downs. He's a heck of a player.
He is.
Yeah, that stretch, that was an amazing stretch of plays.
And then, to beat Notre Dame and going up against the former Buckeye linebacker in Marcus Freeman, it was a fairy tale almost. And at times we were told that Ryan Day would have police at his home during the toughest times. And the, I don't know if it's a wives' tale, but after the championship and they had a ceremony, they had a pep rally, whatever you want to call it, in the shoe. And then they went home and he got out of the car and he told the men in blue, women and men in blue, I think we're good now. And so he released them from that duty of guarding his home. It's an absolute shame that it comes to that kind of thing. But since then, I mean, as he says, winning gives you credibility. And one distinction that I think he's made, John, this year is that when we started the pregame or the camp training camp and the preseason, he said, we're not defending anything, as if to say that trophy is locked up in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center and we're proud of it. But what we're doing now, we're attacking a new season. So if you want to call us the reigning champs or whatever, we're not defending. And I think it was a way for him to turn the page with this current 2025 team.
So he got them refocused and ready to go, because that game is going to be, I mean, everybody is geeked up for it. I'm really excited that we get at 12 noon Eastern, we get that fantastic game. And then at 3:30 Eastern, then Alabama goes down to Florida State. So it's, and then you've got the Clemson LSU. It's going to be a heck of a football Saturday. I'm really geeked up about it. So how is Ohio State rebuilt? What, they lost 14 players that were drafted. They lost some other players. Very heavy junior, senior laden team last year. Really experienced. And I've really bought into these teams that are going to win natties have to recruit really well and keep their recruits and retain them by paying them NIL. I don't believe you can win a natty by just going out and buying players. I don't think what Texas Tech has done, maybe they can
right.
make the playoffs. They're not winning a natty. You just can't build the chemistry. You can't build the cohesiveness. So I think Ohio State did a brilliant job of sprinkling in some high quality transfers. They brought in Will Howard. They had Caleb Downs. They had a few other guys, but I think that's the recipe for
Seth McLaughlin.
Yeah, Seth McLaughlin again.
Yeah.
So you sprinkle in those guys. So how is Ohio State going to rebuild and reload for another run this year, given the loss of all that junior senior leadership?
Well, it's interesting because Ohio State lost their entire defensive line. And so I think every one of them was drafted. So that has been a major, major point of emphasis. They've got some mostly young, and I think they have an X factor in a guy named CJ Hicks, who was playing a linebacker. Now he'll kind of transform into a a stand-up in. They got, and he can wreak havoc. He is coming off the edge, as we've been led to believe. Bo Atkinson, who is a 6'7", 260-pound DN, has also arrived via the portal. And they've got, I think they're going
And by the way, Bo is from North Carolina. I'm a North Carolina grad, so.
I'm sorry. Did I say South Carolina?
Yeah, Bo's from North Carolina, and I know that my North Carolina contingency hates the fact. I don't really talk much North Carolina football until Belichick went over there, and all of a sudden it's gotten real interesting. That's another topic for another day, but I'm really excited to see what happens Monday night when they take on TCU and that Belichick. It's going to be quite the spectacle. But get back to rebuilding the Ohio State team to take another run. So sorry to interrupt, but when you said that, I'm like, okay.
No. UNC, absolutely. Yes. I stand corrected. I love that powder blue, by the way. At any rate, Ole Miss has now adopted that, and they're a bunch of copycats, but I have that thing.
Yes.
So they've replaced those players. They have maybe their best ever linebacking core. Sonny Styles will wear the block O. I wish I could do that, which is a very prominent position on the team, a person who does it all on the field, in the community, in the classroom. Sonny Styles' dad played at Ohio State, was an NFLer as well. Sonny is 6'4", 240. His complement, Arvell Reese, is 6'4", 245. And they have a young kid out of Texas, Peyton Pierce, who's 6'3", 230. All can move. All can go side to side. That's your anchor. The back end is great with Downs. They have some great corners. If Davis Igbinosen can just stay away from the PI calls, he's a corner, Jermaine Matthews. So this defense, and I think both are great, it's going to, you know, many have said it's going to be a low-scoring game. On the offense, the offensive line is as good as they've had. Julian Sayin is the starter.
Let's talk about Julian Sayin. You know, he was at Alabama for a cup of coffee, and then he came up there. And is he ready for this? Is he ready for the moment? He's sat 1 year, and boy, that's – talk about an opening game. I mean, he hasn't – did he get some snaps in last year?
He did. He threw one touchdown pass. So that really is the $64 million question. How do they bring him along? Do they try to establish the run early? You know, they lost those two great backs, both to the NFL, Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson. So, but they have a kid in their running back room named Bo Jackson. They have another runner called Turbo. And then they have a West Virginia transfer who I tried to compare to Eddie George, and the running back coach said, don't use that name, please. But C.J. Donaldson can play. He's 6'2", 230. He's picked up some speed and quickness. Their bell cow, I guess, I think it will be more by committee, is James Peoples, another kid out of Texas. So, and the receivers are just ridiculous. Jeremiah.
So Sayin's got the weapons to get the ball to. Can he be that distributor? Can he be that point guard and put the ball where it needs to go? Because Jeremiah Smith, he's unbelievable.
Yeah, well, he's going to be double teamed or bracketed. And then you've got Carnell Tate, and you've got a kid who was not a starter, but was named captain. I've never heard of such a thing. Brandon Ennis is a kid who will play out of the slot, but Sayin, he just, to me, we don't know yet, but to me, he has it. They say it just the release of the ball. He puts it where nobody else can catch it, but his man. We know Texas will come after him. You gotta ruffle his feathers a little bit, but it does come down to, in many ways, how Julian will play in this game against Arch Manning. It's Bob Gibson against I'm a Cardinal fan from way back against Juan Marichal, I guess. So
They're saying, how's his mobility? How's his ability to extend plays? I'm not real clear on if he's got some dual threat to him, because obviously Manning is, even though he's been groomed to be a pocket passer and to do all that, he certainly is a dual threat quarterback. What about saying?
Yeah, I would say maybe not to that extent, but when you ask the players, they're like, many have said, you'll see. And so as if to say he's run by some guys in practice or whatever. But, you know, we've seen 2.5 practices over the entire 25 practice camp. We did not get to see scrimmages. And I think in the end, that's where he began to distance himself from Lincoln Kienholz, who is a consummate athlete. I think the kid had 30 letters in high school playing 4 sports. Just incredible talent there. I want to put a lacrosse stick in his hand and give him to play for my son. But Lincoln is the better runner. And we'll see if they have a package. But if Saiyan is on, then you won't see Lincoln until next week against Grambling.
And it's interesting that you mentioned, and this is going back to the Ohio State defense, you've got a new defensive line that's young, somewhat inexperienced. Is that fair to say? Going up against the Texas O-line, that's a new O-line, that they've got four new starters there. That is going to be quite interesting to see who's ready to step up and who's better prepared, because both of these teams are loaded. They both have 4-star, 5-star players all over the field. There's tons of NFL players that they're both going to roll out. I think Texas probably got a little bit more junior, senior-laden team than Ohio State does. And correct me if I'm wrong, if Ohio State's a bit younger this year than Texas, but, I mean, it's loaded. Yeah. It's going to be fun to see. And I think both of these, I mean, whoever loses certainly is in a deficit, and it's going to be a little bit of a hole they have to dig out of. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think both of these teams should be in the playoffs and could be a team that Alabama may have to contend with should Alabama succeed and get into the playoff as well. And maybe Alabama might have to play Texas in the SEC championship game as well if things go as people hope around here. But what a battle, and how fascinating it's going to be to see who's able to get their team playing at a high winning level this quickly for such a high level game. Thoughts on that,
John? Just one other factor I would say about Ohio State: they have 2 new coordinators, Brian Hartline.
Oh yeah, thank you for bringing that up. By the way,
Brian Hartline.
I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, Brian Hartline, who has recruited all of this tremendous receiver talent, has kind of been groomed, and now he's the real offensive coordinator. He's going to call the plays. Now, Ryan Day will certainly be on the headset, but I think the training wheels are off. It was kind of a gradual. He was co, and then he was doing. At any rate, he's got the call sheet, and he will call the plays. On the defensive side, this is another very intriguing.
Belichick here, huh? Belichickian there. Matt
there
Patricia. Hey, real quick on Brian Hartline. I want to hear about Matt Patricia, but real quick on Brian Hartline. Is he a Chip Kelly disciple? How is he different from Chip Kelly? Because, you got to say Chip Kelly had a great year last year and did great things with that team. Although I don't know what he was thinking in that Michigan game and what happened with that game plan in the Michigan game. Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they got too conservative and weren't opening it up and stretching the field with all those weapons they had. But am I right or wrong that maybe Chip was a little too conservative in that Michigan game? Is that fair that maybe they
nobody understood it. Nobody understood. And I think ever since Michigan, when they won their first against Day, they beat them 56 to something his first year. Then they pulled the upset. And from that point on, the Michigan mantra has been Ohio State is soft. And that has gotten a little bit maybe in their head. And I think Ryan wanted to say, wait a minute, we can be tough as well, and wanted to prove it a little bit, and he just went way too far. But I digress. But yeah, whether Brian's a Chip Kelly clone, or I guess he had an internship, but Chip was only here, you know, 8-9 months, won right. a championship, back to the NFL. Hartline was a very, very good NFL receiver, played 6, 7, 8 years, Dolphins, and then the Browns, if I'm not mistaken. Left after 3 years when many thought, what is he doing? But he's got swag and he's got smarts, and I think he's going to call a great game. We shall see. And then you've got Patricia, who is, I think, so crafty, won 3 Super Bowls with Belichick, with the Patriots. His tenure with the Lions as a head coach didn't go great.
Did not.
But after Jim Knowles.
And by the way, as an OC, it didn't go well either when he went back to New England as an OC. He's on the right side of the ball now going back to.
You're right. and when Jim Knowles departed, went to Penn State, and Patricia was hired. Since then, they don't say Knowles was, you know, he had gotten better each year, and that defense was lights out last year. But I think they appreciate Patricia's humanness, his ability to mix and match, his ability to put you in a position where you can, I think there will be more, I'm not sure what the word is, but just explosiveness perhaps from the defense. And all of this unfolds. There's so many unanswered questions, John. And yeah, I want to see. I did hear one guy, and I said this on our own podcast, Aaron Rodgers' brother, help me here, his first
Jordan,
name.
Jordan Rodgers?
So Jordan, the former quarterback.
The Vanderbilt quarterback. And by the way, I don't know if I had shared this with you, Clay, but I grew up a Vandy fan. So yeah. Talk about miserable football watching in the 70s and 80s. And my only experience with Bear Bryant, I love the story you told, was watching him on the sidelines as Alabama would come into Dudley Field in Vanderbilt Stadium and would roll up. You know, it was 45-3, 42-6, just – I got to see great SEC football, but I got to see Vanderbilt be a doormat. So anyway, it's just.
Yeah. Well, Mississippi State was like that for most of its history. That's why I love Dak Prescott so much, because he took us to number one and he put that school on his back. And I don't want to, I've got Dak autograph. I got my son. I've got a Dan Mullen autograph picture. Yeah, so I'm a nut. Now, living here now for 3 decades in a place that I went to high school, I have to tell you, when they sing the alma mater, I get a lump in my throat. I never saw that coming, but it's called Carmen, Ohio, and it's time and change will surely show how firm thy friendship, Ohio. And so I just, it took me by surprise that I've kind of, yeah, I would never say I'm a fan, because I couldn't be in that that space when you're in the media, and you've got to be, you know, even with Urban, who I would say I had the best relationship with, you know, there are days when you have to, you know, he was suspended for 3 games and he had some days in there that were tough. But at any rate, I don't even remember the question.
So you were talking about Jordan Rodgers, and then I kind of interrupted you and threw out my little Vanderbilt trivia, but you were talking about Jordan Rodgers on your podcast.
Yeah. And I saw him among the ESPN talking heads, and he said, well, I don't believe you'll hear this from anyone else. I haven't heard it, but with Arch Manning, the tape doesn't live up to the hype. Now, that's the first time anyone has said anything critical, or I don't know how you weigh that, but that surprised me. And you can make anybody look good or bad with video. You can show a pick, or you can show a touchdown. You can show an overthrown ball or whatever, a drop pass. So we'll see. We'll see. The jury's out clearly on both guys. Arch clearly has more experience being in three. I think he started two games. Well, that may be incorrect. I think he played in three, maybe four.
Yeah, he
But
started two games last year, I believe Mississippi State and what was it, Texas San Antonio. I think he started
okay.
those two games while yours was out. And you know, it's interesting that Jordan had that take that he's overhyped and the tape doesn't live up. I don't know if you know Daniel Jeremiah personally, if you've ever met him or had any experience with him, but you know, he's big NFL Network guy, draft guy, and
Okay.
Rhett Lewis, who's also on the NFL Network, and DJ were talking about Arch, and they said at the Manning camp he was lights out, and that the guy has all the tools. Now, can he
Yeah.
handle it? Can he handle it when he's got what, a second or so to make quick decisions and do
Right.
the right thing with the ball? Can he, as his grandfather keeps telling him, slide or get out of bounds? Can he throw the ball away effectively, and not get those big negative plays? And around here, Jalen Milroe is, that was a mixed bag last year. That guy was fantastic and could make some unbelievable plays, but he could lose you the game as well. And he did in multiple games last year. So it's going to be fascinating to see Arch with that quarterback pedigree, being from the Manning royalty family. Can he live up to his uncles? Can he live up to his granddad and do that? And you know, maybe he has a bad first game against Ohio State, and then he comes on because it's a long season and there's a lot to play for. But I'm just fascinated by it, and then fascinated to see how Julian Sayin steps up in his first big game. I mean,
Right, right.
wow.
Yeah, it's as a kid, I idolized Archie Manning, and I was raised primarily. My parents are from Mississippi, but I was raised primarily in the Midwest. I mean, I don't want to get. It's like eight or I think we had 9 or 10 moves. Anyway, my brother-in-law, we could always see it when my dad walked in the door. We're moving, aren't we? I can't. And so we were in three little towns. I mean, in Mississippi, as I was a month old. Then it was Chattanooga, Effingham, Illinois, Wichita, Kansas City, Indianapolis. I think Columbus was the last stop. But it was fun in a sense, and it kind of teaches you to persevere and sort of think on your feet a lot. But again, I digress. So it's the Ohio State is also going to implement some things where they hope to have a little bit more fun inside the shoe. They've been accused of, and that's why people here are so upset that this is not going to be a night game. But when you take the money from Fox, they dictate when we're going to play the games, and Ohio State carries the water. I mean, there's some other good teams in this league, no question about it. But when it comes to TV numbers and eyeballs, they are apt to put Ohio State or Michigan or Oregon on there. And so they're a little upset because they know next year at Texas it'll be a night game and everybody will be well lubricated.
Right. Yeah, no, it's going to be quite the circus, and I'm sure it's exciting to be up there in the middle of it. And you know, we've had a few of those here in
No
Tuscaloosa
doubt.
over the years, but wow, what a game. Yeah, where do you think Ohio State is has the biggest weaknesses that are of concern that you know they've got to folks are going to have to step up? You know, if you had two or three areas that you're like, okay, this is what really worries me, and I could go through a litany of things with Alabama that are concerning, such as our interior defensive line. How good are we going to be? Penalties, things like that. I'm curious with Ohio State, what are those question mark areas that they're going to have to answer the bell or they're going to lose?
Yeah, I think it's the defensive line. That's where the concern has been, because I mean they've had a number of players just like these receivers who are drafted, the Chase Young, the Boses, and many, many more. And so now you've got Jack Sawyer with the Steelers, and you've got Tyleek Williams was drafted. They just had such they had those run pluggers who could not be moved, and yet they had Sawyer and others, you know, getting to the quarterback. And so now some young guys will have to step up. They're going to, if Jim Knowles was the mad scientist, I think Matt Patricia is to the 10th power. I cannot wait to see how he deploys certain players like a Sonny Styles, who was a safety for a while and then went to his natural position as a linebacker, and how it's going to unfold. Edrick Houston is a highly touted recruit, got banged up in preseason, but he is full go, ready to go. Caden McDonald is a kid with just a great dry wit, really good with the media. And I think the thing I got from a lot of these media sessions and availabilities was the seriousness and the sincerity of this team wanting to show the guys who just walked out the door, we're good too, and we're going to show you. And so the talk of back-to-back has never been run from. I mean, Ryan has brought it up. But to do something like that, you have to be exceptional. And as he often says, it takes everybody. It takes the play-by-play radio guy. It takes the dance team. It takes – and so he's tried to get this – we're all in this together, and you have to help me. And I don't know how many times he has said to Buckeye Nation, get there early and be loud. We cannot allow them to hear the snap count. And he did it just like that, pounding the table. And so it should be off the chain, as the kids say, at high noon in the shoe.
So, on the offensive side, it sounds like the D-line and maybe even the interior D-line is probably the biggest question mark. Linebackers, you're very confident in. The secondary seems to be great. On the offensive line, besides Julian Sayin, who's a big question mark for everybody, can he, like Arch Manning? And that's going to be so fascinating to see which one of those two guys is able to get the win. And I think it's going to be a really close game. I don't anticipate a blowout. I'd be surprised if it is. I think it'll be a 3-7 point game. But even though Ohio State beat Texas 28-14, that could have gone the other way, or it could have been Ohio State needing to kick a field goal at the end to get out of there with the 24-21 run, just given what happened in the last 2 minutes of that game. Are there any other big question marks on the offense besides saying in your mind – where you're going, I don't know what we're going to get here.
No, I think the offensive line is superior. I don't know how deep they are. You know, do they go 7, 8, 9? Do they go 6? Do they play, you know, do these guys have to play 60 or 70 plays? But they had a kid step up at left tackle, Austin Saraveld, who was just kind of drifting last year as a guard. He became a captain. Luke Montgomery is the left guard. Carson Hensman, the entire offensive line is Ohioans except Carson Hensman, who is right out of that Wisconsin Badger mold. He's a Wisconsin kid, 6'6", you know, huge. And he is a Remington Award candidate. Tegra Shibola played a lot last year, 6'6". He's a mammoth kid. 330, and then at right tackle, that's still a little bit up for grabs. One of the kids in the running is Philip Daniels. I want to call him Charlie, just to, you know how the devil goes down to Georgia.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Maybe volunteer jam back in Nashville in the days when Charlie Daniels would do his volunteer jam. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
CBD.
And, that's right, and he is battling a kid, Ethan Oniawa, who came from Rice, and another statue. I mean, pardon me, that sounds derogatory. Just a
big dude. He's a big dude.
Oh, my. Yeah, he's like 6'6", 350, you know. He's just, they have the beef up front. I guess on offense, other than saying it would be the running backs. What will they produce? Can they open the holes? Will they be productive? Can they get, they've had a tough time around here, it seems, over time on fourth and one, fourth and two, fourth and three. Can you move the chains and keep the drives alive?
Hey, to that note on the running backs, do they have a burner back there? Because obviously Travion Henderson was amazing in his ability. Once he got in space, he was taking it to the house. Do they have another burner type guy that can accelerate and who has that fourth, sub 4.4 speed and also can catch out of the backfield? What's it look like for the backs?
Yeah, we haven't seen enough. James Peoples is a tough runner. C.J. Donaldson is a brute. I would say Bo Jackson, and I've heard a little bit of buzz about him lately in camp. He could be a guy who sort of steps up and, oh, we don't just have two, we have three. Now, do they – I don't think any have that Travion speed, but, again, we'll see. Football speed sometimes is all you need, and with all that equipment, and if you can, I would love to see Bo Jackson emerge, that's for sure. And again, this kid Turbo Rogers, these guys are coached hard. I mean, Carlos Lachlan, who came from Oregon two seasons ago, and he says, "I'm not here to be your friend, fellas. I'm just not. You're going to get the work done or you're not going to play." I like his toughness. And that seems to me has transferred to these kids. And Ryan Day stresses it all the time. I mean, one of their core principles is toughness. So see who's tougher on Saturday.
So what's really giving you pause about Texas that has you concerned? Can we deal with X, Y, or Z from Texas? Are there any things that's really got you worried, given that, they've got a lot of talent on that roster, and Sark is a good offensive mind?
No doubt about it. Well, I mean, all you have to do is go back to 8 months ago when Texas is on the goal line about to tie the game, and the strip sack happens, and the game, for all intents and purposes,
it's over. Yeah, as soon as that happens, it's over.
It's a 28-14 final. Igbinosin, I believe, made the pick. I do expect it. Frankly, my score is 24-23. So I think it is that.
Ohio close. State winning?
I would give them the narrow okay. edge. Okay. But Manning could be the difference. He might outplay Julian Sain. We shall see. I just think, what Tim May, who does the podcast with me, and it's the Tim May Show.
By the way, go ahead and tell us about your podcast so that our listeners know what it is. Go ahead and tell us.
Yeah, he kind of drugged me into it.
It's called the Tim May Podcast with Clay Hall. Is that correct?
It's called the Tim May Show featuring Clay Hall.
Okay.
And I said, no, Tim, we're featuring you. I'm riding shotgun, but he is a kid who is from Lufkin, Texas, but grew up in Demopolis, Alabama, and is a Bama fan through and through, though he has moved here in the early 80s, and he is the dean of the Buckeye Beat Writers since 1984.
Wow.
He is 71 years old. And he's on the radio somewhere every day. So at any rate, I see it. I see it being very close. They have started. They've instituted a Ohio State would always ring a victory bell after every win. And it would go on and on. And it was another great tradition here. But now they're going to ring the victory bell before the game starts, and Archie Griffin is going to ring it for the first time on Saturday. And they hope that will kind of fuel the crowd and be that place that is doesn't allow Texas to hear the snap count.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Getting back to what concerns you the most about Texas, you've got a narrow Ohio State victory. What are the two or three things that just really gives you pause and concern? Is can we deal with this? Can we handle that? Or are there any things in particular that you want to see how they handle it?
Besides Arch, I think their receivers are good, serviceable. I don't know if they have what they had last year. They have a stud on the D line. They have a tremendous linebacker. I'm not sure. I feel like both teams have these, what were gaping holes after graduation, and now they've filled them, and we're going to find out how good the young kids can be in those spots. I think my point about Tim was, I wish this game was in October when both teams will be cooking. And somebody here has said, well, it might be a little clunky. And I'm like, Texas, Ohio State, clunky? Surely not. But it's game number one, and nobody's been out there in the quote unquote real bullets. So, yeah, there's just so many questions about it. And so, again, I think it's somewhat low scoring, and I think it's very close and maybe a big play late. I really want to see, because Texas, to their credit, was able to take Jeremiah Smith out of the last game. He caught one pass for 3 yards. Now, he's a kid that, hey, if that's what you want to do, Carnell Tate and Brandon Ennis, this captain I was talking about, are tremendous players, and they got a portal tight end, Max Clair from Purdue, when I thought they had the best tight end room in the country, and they get this guy. He's now the starter, and a lot of folks think that they will target him a sufficient number of times as well.
And your point about a low-scoring game, both teams, everything I've read, those defenses are loaded on both sides of the ball. You've noted that maybe the defensive line's a little bit of a concern with Ohio State, but I do think that could lead to the defenses being ahead of the offenses game number one and could produce very high-level play of defense, and the offense is struggling and keep it low scoring, maybe even 21-17 or 21-20. It wouldn't surprise me. And if both quarterbacks are being protective of the ball and trying to avoid the costly turnover like Texas had in that game last year, I could very much see that. And as you said, if they meet again in the playoffs, it could be a much, both teams would be much more fine-tuned. And,
no
and
doubt.
You know what they really are. And I do think you could see a rematch of these two teams in the playoffs, possibly even in the national championship game. Now, I'm hoping Alabama will be one of those teams there, but
that's right.
Yet to be seen.
John, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
How is Bama Nation dealing with Kalen DeBoer?
I think it's show me season. I really do. I think people are optimistic that we kept everybody. We retained the core players on our roster. We sprinkled in some good portal transfer guys. We've got a junior, senior, laden team. Mm-hmm. We have a fourth-year junior starting at quarterback, and I'll credit Arch that Arch sat there for 2 years when he could have gone anywhere he wanted and started last year. Well, Ty Simpson sat there for 3 years. And word on the street was midway through the season, when Milroe really regressed, there was some movement among the team to get Milroe out of there and put Simpson in. And Simpson, from the stories, is he sat back and said, I'm not playing this game. I'm if the coaches want to put me in, but I'm not going to go lobby for it. I'm going to sit back and wait my time. And now is Ty Simpson's time. So Alabama's got the same thing that Texas and Ohio State have, new quarterback. Now, he's been in the program 3 years, 1 year under Saban, or 2 years under Saban, 1 year under DeBoer. And we think he can distribute the ball. The problem with Milroe is Milroe's a fantastic runner. He can throw the deep ball, but his accuracy on the short intermediate ball and his ability to read defense is very questionable. We hope and we think Simpson is more of a traditional quarterback that can fit into DeBoer's system. And Ryan Grubb. Don't forget that Ryan Grubb was not there last year, and he was with the Seahawks. And DeBoer's success has always been tied to having Ryan Grubb as his OC. Now he's back. And so we're really optimistic that and some people were concerned about the play calling, about the development of the quarterback, because Milroe had a worse season last year than he did under Saban. So was he coached up properly, and how much did DeBoer and his coaches have control of the team in that transition? So I think people are very optimistic. But if he goes 7-5, he goes 8-4, misses the playoffs, the heat is going to be turned way up, and it's going to be a big disappointment. So optimistic, people think, haven't given up on DeBoer yet, and they're not calling for his firing. But, and you know, I don't know if you saw Stephen A. Smith's little clickbait about calling for Deion Sanders to come in and DeBoer to be fired and for Deion to take over. Well, we're a long way from that. We need to see what Deion does without Shador, and we need to see what Deion does without Travis Hunter. What can he do this year? You know, because he may go 4-8 in the Big 12. But yes, there is people want to see DeBoer show that he can win in the SEC. And the other thing I would say, he went 1-3 on the road in the SEC last year. And particularly losing to Vanderbilt and then losing the way they did to Oklahoma was just – it was awful. So people, if you get some repeats of that, if he can't go at least 2-2 on the road in the SEC and he's got to run the tables at home, I think if he goes worse than 10-2, seat's going to get a lot warmer. If he doesn't go at least 9-3, and I'm not sure he can make the playoffs going 9-3, then it's going to get really interesting down here. So, you know, we weren't supposed to talk about Alabama. I'm happy to answer questions, but that's the atmosphere down here. That's the way I read things.
Sure.
So if Ohio State loses, which to me it's a toss-up game. I wouldn't want to lay any money on this. I certainly think playing at home gives Ohio State the advantage. We don't know what Arch is going to be. And I was going to tell you, Ty Simpson has the ability to run. He's a mobile quarterback, but knows how to play within the pocket. You may not know this, 5-star recruit who's a coach's son. So his dad's a high school coach, so he has that pedigree. And you know, that's going to be the interesting thing is Arch going to be able to make enough plays with his legs? And is Arch going to show that maybe Sarkisian made a mistake by being too loyal to Ewers last year? Was Ewers the better player last year, or was Sark being loyal to the fifth-year senior who came back? Arch is going to show one way or another. We'll know in about – 7 games if maybe Art should have been playing last year. And that, is yours, what was he, a 7th round draft pick? And
he was late, 6th maybe, I don't know, 5th, 6th, 7th, but you're right. And he was supposed to be the second coming of Dan Marino, I think, at times when he might have taken 3 snaps here. It was a very odd situation. And he got, I think he got his $1 million perhaps and moved on. So at any rate.
And Ewers, he was very injury prone. Texas should have beaten Alabama at Texas. I think it was 3 years ago. Saban went out there. And then Texas came in with Ewers the next year and beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. And then, you know, both years, his final 2 years at Texas, they got to the semis and then lost both games. So Ewers was a good college quarterback, but boy, he got injured a lot. And we'll see. But I think Manning, unless he just doesn't have the mind and the ability to, and quarterback's so hard to play, I think Manning's going to be proven to be a much better quarterback and going to prove out. But again, boy, what a tough position. So
I think Arch will prove to be very durable, resourceful. He's got the DNA, and I've had some connection with the Manning family, having covered Cooper when he had his 1 year at Ole Miss. I came across Archie numerous times while working in Columbus, Mississippi, and later in Jackson. I even used him as a reference on a job on my resume. I got the interview, but not the gig, and he's never let me forget it. But at any rate, and Peyton comes here every summer to play in the Memorial Tournament. What do you call it? Pro-Am.
Yeah.
And now he, because Nationwide is the sponsor. And so he's always, just very so personable and will sign every darn thing there is. And, it's been fun to be around him as well.
That's exciting. Okay. On a different topic, I think we've beaten up this game. It's exciting. Okay. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. I want to talk about the 2014-2015 team that beat Alabama and knocked them out the first time they expanded the playoffs to four teams, and Alabama had a lead, and then Ohio State just ran them out of the stadium. And then this year's Natty team, which one of those teams do you think is the better team?
Yeah, I think, sir, I'm going to use that question to Urban Meyer tomorrow and see what he says.
And you tell Urban that the Bamature Hour gave you that question.
That's right. Wow. Because that team, the 14 team, also had 28, but a similar number of draftees.
Oh, I'm looking at Ezekiel Elliott as a freshman, Terry McLaurin, right. Devin Smith, yeah. Joey Bosa. Yeah. I mean, Cardell Jones was the third quarterback, and I'm like, we're going to beat you all because you got your third stringer in there, and he lit us up. I mean, I looked at the roster when I was doing the show prep just to refresh my memory. I'm like, that team was – but it was young. That was a young team.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's why everybody thought they would go back-to-back in 15, and then it didn't happen.
And who won in 15? Alabama over Clemson.
Yeah, so I just recall walking off the field with Urban after doing a show down there in the confetti, and I said, Coach, you'll never have to buy a drink or a meal in the state of Ohio ever again because you just exercised the demon. And up here, and maybe everywhere, Alabama's the standard. And he always felt that way. And I think when his year when Ohio State couldn't go to a bowl and he was on ESPN on the set analyzing games, and he made it very clear, we're not them, and we've got to get – and he started just recruiting everywhere. Jim Tressel had more of a Ohio-centric approach. We're going to, get the fence around. We're going to take these kids who know what it means to be a Buckeye. And Urban was like, I want every five-star I can get. I don't care where they're from. And yet he's a native Ohioan as well. One of the best stories I ever did was I took him back to his hometown of Ashtabula, and he reminisced about riding his bike. We would get on our bikes and we'd drive here, there, and go get an ice cream cone. And then we'd jump in Lake Erie, and he was lamenting the loss of innocence that we have now. And it just was so heartfelt. And then he made a major, major donation to his school. And he was motivated to do so because the sister who ran the school said, Coach Meyer, we need your help. And she knocked on his door the first week he was on the job. At any rate, I'm going to ask that. The whole thing was just crazy. I mean,
so what do you think? Urban's team or Ryan Day's team? Which one, if you had to pick one to line up against and throw them out there in a do or die situation, which team? Putting you on the spot.
Wow. I think because so many older guys rallied to the cause, because Jack Sawyer was sitting around in this moped, you know, state, and he called Ryan Day and he said, I'm not going out like this. And it set off this tumble of like, it wasn't all about the money. We have to leave a mark here. We never beat Michigan. This cannot be our legacy. So I'm going to say what they did because of the run they made that I don't think will ever be duplicated. I'm going to say Ryan Day. And okay. And if Urban finds out about that, he'll disown me. It was Zeke Elliott, and as it goes down here, in the famous words of Paul Keel's The Voice, he said, Zeke Elliott just ran 85 yards through the heart of the South. And I just felt like Alabama was the standard. Urban certainly had his battles with Saban, and for them to win that one, it just meant so much to Ohio State people, not to mention 7-0 against Michigan. That 7-0 is on his restaurant in Dublin, Ohio.
I love it. So a question for you, going into that playoff with the 14-15 team, were you confident that Ohio State was going to win the Natty, or were you like, we just got to see what happens? You know, what was your feeling about that team? Was that sort of unexpected that they did what they did to you?
Well, I think
what they did for that playoff run.
Oh, yeah. And I think after they beat Alabama, it was almost like, we'll play the Green Bay Packers. It doesn't matter. We will win. And then they kind of, it was a pretty substantial win against Oregon.
They beat Oregon.
Like a drum.
Silly. Yeah. They beat them silly. So that to me, was that the more unexpected team to win it versus 24-25? Ohio State came in ranked number one. They had a 1-point loss at Oregon. And,
right.
You know, you can excuse that because they're in Oregon. I mean, crazy.
Yeah.
And then the Michigan. I mean, did you still feel, even after the Michigan loss, that this Ohio State team going into the playoffs could and should win it?
No.
No. Okay.
No way. And nobody in this town could tell you that they would have said yes. It was that last chance, and they certainly treated it as such. But what evolved after that loss and the way they dominated in some games was like, where has that team been? Because everybody in this town and the state was like, that's who we thought they were. What the hell happened? And then as it snowballed and again, I think, you know, Ryan said something the other day, and it takes me back to that Will Howard pass to J.R. Smith to lock up the Notre Dame game when they bomb, a little streak down the sideline. And he was like, we're not going to go nuts, but we're going to let it fly. We're going to let it all hang out. He said, every time we don't want to be timid, we don't want to be. And I think now that they've proven that they can win the biggest game, maybe we'll see a little more of that in a clutch situation. But again, you got a first-year quarterback, and you got to kind of, okay, all right. But eventually, I think Saiyan is going to be, I think he'll be a Heisman candidate. I think Arch Manning will certainly be a Heisman candidate. And hopefully they do play in the playoff.
I will say, you know, watching Ohio State from outside of the Ohio bubble, I still think most people felt like Oregon got a terrible draw to have Ohio State and Texas on their side of the bracket.
True.
And, We thought Tennessee was a good team, and we thought, okay, maybe Ohio State is just been exposed by Michigan, but that was not true. They had one bad game, and whether it was a bad game plan or the guys just – but it's like once they unleashed their true potential against Tennessee, I'm like, yeah, they're going to win it all. And I think those of us who are watching it more objectively, and since Alabama was out of it, I didn't have a dog in the hunt. I really felt like that. I felt that Ohio State could win it even from the eighth seed. I felt bad for Oregon having to play them on a neutral field, and then after they stomped Oregon, I'm like, yeah, they're winning it all.
And maybe that's why I'm giving Ohio State the little bit of the edge, because J.R. Smith, otherworldly. He's not like anything I've ever seen. And Caleb Downs, they now call him Coach Downs here, because of his kind of innate ability to be in the right place, to anticipate, to just make play after play. Maybe for that reason. And I know if Arch shines, he's going to be one of those too. But I think people now have seen that they can win the big one, because that was the problem when I first got here with John Cooper, who had the same Michigan issue. He went 2-10-1, and then the bowl game too would be kind of a downer. And so I think maybe Ryan Day even now knows. He says after they lost to Michigan, his wife said, "You got us in this mess. Now get us out of it." There was no patting on the back at home. And by the way, those two were on the same little league baseball team in New Hampshire, and so they've become kind of a special couple here now. So, yeah, she was giving it to him.
All right. I love it. Listen, I know it's getting late. Thank you for your time, Clay. And again, you are our guest number one, who's someone outside of being a Bamateur, which means you're a professional.
Right.
You're in the know. I really appreciate you jumping on here. Much thanks to you. Much thanks to your brother, who is a good friend and colleague of mine. And I appreciate you being on here. If I can return the favor,
if
you guys want to have some, get some Southern SEC Alabama, happy to be available if that makes sense for you all. But anyway, thank you so much for being on here.
You're welcome.
I know you want to get to bed, but we'll wrap this up. All right.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to stop the flow here.
No.
Give me your cell one more time, John.
Yeah, I will text it to you as soon as we jump off. I'll send it to an email and a text so that you've got it. But I'm happy to return the favor. All right, well, this has been another episode of the Bamateur Hour. Thank you much, Clay Hall. God bless and roll tide.